So I'm delighted to be here with Marina Sharma this morning. Marina, you blog and tweet as Eye on the East, and a lot of your coverage comes from Beirut and Lebanon, where you live, and then from further afield as well. And on this day in Northern Ireland, where we're kind of waiting to see whether or not our political institutions collapse, I thought it'd be interesting to talk to you because in Beirut, you're having similar but different problems. There've been street protests recently. With a kind of hashtag of you stink. Tell us, Marina, a wee bit about what's the background to people coming onto the street on the banner of you stink?
Hi, Alan. Thanks for taking the time to talk to me and learn more about what is happening in Beirut. It's interesting that all this current the movements and the protests on the ground have been unleashed because of a garbage crisis. The question in Lebanon has always been not why people are not taking to the ground to protest a variety of things for years on end. The question really has been why it has taken people so long to protest and to demand everything from better infrastructure, less corruption, better services, better judicial system, and so on.
On the point of the garbage stuff, how bad's the problem?
Well, to give just to be a little bit brief on this, to give you a general overview, on July 17th, the main landfill that covered administrative Beirut, Greater Beirut, and Beirut's northern and southern suburbs was effectively closed. So, since July 17th, we have not had a proper landfill waste dump to cover these areas. So what has happened is that garbage has been literally littering, adorning the streets, the highways, the sidewalks of the entire city and beyond.
And this finally tipped people over the edge to come onto the streets to say enough is enough.
This absolutely tipped people. It's so when this happened, you had the one of the main groups that are currently now on the forefront, because one has to say that many splinter groups have also appeared on the ground, which is, I think, something very, very good and very healthy. So one of the main groups that established because of this is You Stink, very very interesting, and the name obviously is
It does exactly what it says in the tin.
absolutely, absolutely. So they took to the ground at the very beginning of the crisis, very modestly. Some of their first protests were just a couple of people on the ground protesting in front of the presidency of the Council of Ministers, protesting in front of Parliament, and protesting, on the streets. They were very, and are still are, very strong on social media, taking pictures of the garbage in and around the city, taking pictures in the middle of the night of trucks taking garbage and dumping them in random places, sometimes next to the sea, sometimes in protected areas, natural habitats, and so on. So really, this got people to talk about this day in and day out. And people realize how bad the problem is. Now,
So we would expect.
obviously,
I was going to say we would expect that if a few thousand people on the street looking at garbage, it would be really very, be relatively peaceful and nearly ignorable. Is that the way it has turned out?
well, it's interesting because during, in after the couple of weeks after the dump was closed, people started taking to the streets. The government, finally decided that they had to start finding a proper and sustainable solution to the problem, because the issue of the closing of the dump on July 17th wasn't something that came, suddenly. The government knew that this would be a problem, and they have been dragging the problem for months on end. So, in the couple of weeks after this happened, after the activists took to the ground, one important moment in the movement came about about 2 weeks ago when a couple of protesters stood in front of the presidency of the Council of Ministers and one of the councils of the Development and Reconstruction, which was studying new bids in order for them to new bids for companies to take control. And now it got rather violent. Activists, relatively violent, obviously. Activists were attacked with water cannons, and this is what dragged people to take a look again at this movement and realize that these are peaceful Lebanese young protesters that have taken to the streets to demand an end to the corrupt way in which garbage is managed. Now, it's important, I think, to note the word corruption, because the issue and the portfolio of garbage has been stinking quite literally with corruption for almost 20 years. And it's important also to note that, and maybe we will get to this in a bit, the issue of corruption in the garbage portfolio really opened the whole portfolio of government corruption as a whole, so that when people were taking to the streets, whether it was August 22, August 23, and the massive protest on August 29, the demands were, of course, about garbage, because it affects us all, but they also went to call for an end to corruption in so many other fields that affects people's daily lives.
In terms of the protests so far, has there been a political reaction to them? Has anything changed?
I think currently we can talk about two major successes. The first success is, specifically on the garbage issue, the first success is that a couple of days after people really started taking to the streets, the government had awarded contracts for five or six companies to take care of the garbage crisis. People went crazy. And two days later, the government canceled all the rewarding of the bids. So I think this may be, in the grander scheme of things, this may be a small success. But when it comes to what's happening now, especially in terms of the garbage crisis, this is a huge success. Because if you looked at the companies that had been awarded the contracts, you could immediately see, and you know, for whoever is really following up closely on Lebanese politics, you could immediately see that every company was close to, if not directly related to, either a political party or a political or a political figure. So it was outrageous. The government retracted these immediately. So I think this is, in terms of a technical success, one of the biggest so far. The second, and I think the one that has more long-term repercussions, is the fact that after so many years of apathy, of indifference, of despair, should I say, people are finally on the streets and demanding from their government what they deserve. And I say this because indifference, you know, and I don't want to philosophize things here, but it has become poisonous, because after so many years of people, you know, just taking it as it comes, believing that nothing can change and nothing can happen, we've had many instances in the past 10 years, should I say, of lost opportunities of changing so many things, whether it was when we took to the streets to demand parliamentary elections, when we took to the streets to demand the downfall of the conventional system. People were enthusiastic for a very short period of time, and then they realized that nothing had changed. So many, many people had lost hope. I think the garbage crisis, as ironic as it is, brought back hope for people, no matter how it will last. But I think we now have a window of opportunity that we shouldn't let go by.
I mean, Belfast and Beirut frequently end up on the same sentences and kind of comparisons of violence and so on over the years. But at the moment, we would probably share parts of your story in terms of there are certainly worries about political corruption, but not probably more isolated to one issue than the kind of the wider scale of things. But we do have our own politicians describe Stormont and so on as not fit for purpose and dysfunctional and so on. And there's a lot of calls for reform and change there. But in terms of the wider political dysfunction and corruption and so on, I mean, politics isn't really held in high regard in Lebanon, is it? I mean, you've quite a number of different things from the, I guess, kind of lengthening the mandate for various things, and it's a bit of a mess.
A bit of a mess is a very nice way of phrasing it, a very diplomatic way of phrasing it. Now, if I can go back to the issue of Belfast and Beirut, as you know, I visited Belfast about a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. It was a fascinating experience. I loved the place for what it is, and I also was seduced by how similar it is to Lebanon in many ways. Mm-hmm. And well, unfortunately, it does have to do with the violence, but
even in terms of size, I mean, we're less than 2 million, you're kind of 3 to 4 million, you know, there's a lot of things in common. Yeah,
absolutely. And the one thing that I also think is very important to remember here is, given both of our cities' divisions, which obviously boil down to, religion,
yeah.
The issue of garbage here and the importance of the issue of garbage, again, it's funny, but, at this point, me as a Lebanese, I say, you know, whatever works. So if it's garbage, so be it.
Yeah.
The importance of the issue of garbage is that it brought people together, no matter who you were, no matter who you pray to, Christian, Lebanese, whether you were from the northern suburb, the southern suburb, rich, unemployed, educated, illiterate, whatever it was. Garbage has no religion, has no social class, has no language except for poison and an unhealthy environment. So this is also something very important, because previous issues, whether it was, sectarianism or parliament, it was very easy for politics to get in the middle of that. Whereas here you have a purely health and environmental problem. And this is what brought people together. I think it's very important to pause and think about that, because I am sure in both of our countries and both of our cities, there has to be issues that bring people together, no matter who they are and on which side of the city they live in. And I think the issue of garbage, it's really its strength. Because you cannot divide it. Wherever you are, you will be suffering, and we are all suffering from this. So
the protest movements like You Stink, they would bring people together from all communities.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And the last biggest demonstration, and I say the last one because we do have one coming up on September 9, this coming Wednesday. August 29th was the biggest protest ever in Lebanese history, brought together by independently. So it wasn't called by a political party or anything else. And again, this is very, very important, because political parties are well established. They're sectarian. They have a history. They have funding, whether it's local or whether it's foreign, and they can bring people. You know, they do bring them. They have a history in doing so. Whereas on August 29, people with either no political affiliation or, and I think this is really what also got the government and political parties scared, anxious, is that we also saw people that had a political affiliation, but they were also tired of where their political leaders got them. So they also took to the streets to say enough is enough.
So in many ways, there's a kind of a civil democracy movement rising. People are beginning to fight back against the shape of their political system. That's likely to be a rather long and frustrating process, but I suppose it does give you hope that it is a non-sectarian way of starting to tackle the issue.
Absolutely. And again, when we talk about our own system of government, I mean, Lebanon is a parliamentarian democracy. Parliamentarian, I would put in quotes, and democracy, I would put in quotes. And the reason I do so is that, as I mentioned a bit earlier, our parliament has self-extended its mandate twice since 2013. So that makes what we have as a parliament unconstitutional and non-representative of the people. I also mentioned democracy in quotes because at the very beginning of the protests on August 22 and 23, the way that law enforcement behaved with its own citizens was anything but what a police force would behave with its citizens in a democracy. The reaction of law enforcement was absolutely unacceptable.
Let's go into that. I mean, you saw some of this and you wrote about it on your blog, but it was more than just water cannon, which you might excuse as a way of controlling a large crowd that was going the wrong direction, but it was much more serious than that.
It was much more serious, and taking in mind that during these 2 days, which was really the spark that lit the fire, there were many people, old, young, there were families, there were even children. Other than the water cannons that were used, there was tear gas, there was rubber bullets, and at some point, live fire shots. So it was obviously very scary for the people that were there, but it was a shock. And although the Minister of Interior has come out on a number of occasions to deny the force or the extent of the force that was used, this has all been documented. I mean, mm-hmm. thousands of people were there, whether it was documented with sound bites, with video, everything, and with picture and with still pictures. This was documented, so it's very difficult to deny what happened on those 2 days.
What's going to happen next in Beirut? I mean, in Belfast, we're waiting for the Secretary of State in Westminster, Theresa Villiers. We're waiting for her to make a statement this afternoon about 3:30, which, depending on the words and the phrases she uses about IRA involvement and activity, perhaps in the a couple of recent murders in Belfast. So that may lead to the walkout of the DUP from the executive and so on, or it may lead to them taking other action that kind of slows the whole thing down and kind of brings it to a halt. So we're kind of in that one of those moments of not quite sure what's going to happen next, but it doesn't look particularly good. It's just the speed of decline is what we're looking for. But mm-hmm. in terms of Beirut, you say that there are more protests coming up on the 9th. Any notion that, if you like, other parties will come out of this, that actually other political movements will form that are non-sectarian, that divide communities differently to the past? Is that one thing that might happen?
Well, before I go into what will happen, which is really the September 9th protest, and there is a reason for that, let me go back a little bit to mention an interesting thing that happened last week. So last Tuesday, a group of about 40, which included activists from YouStink movement, there's activists of other groups, including We Want to Account, went up to the Ministry of Environment and sat down peacefully, demanding the resignation of the Minister of Environment. Mm-hmm. They were held there for about 6 or 7 hours. They were beaten, and the Minister of Environment didn't resign. So this took the establishment by surprise, because this is something that I don't believe has ever happened. And they did this because after the August 29 protest, the whole groupings, the whole movement gave a deadline to the government, saying that if you not comply with our demands, and the demands were really the resignation of the Minister of Environment, given that he was really the main figure that who had jurisdiction over the issue of garbage. Yeah. So they were calling for his resignation. They were calling for accountability for the violence exerted against the protesters. They were also calling for a sustainable resolution to the garbage crisis, and so these were, you know, some of the main demands. So the government didn't comply. The groups went up. The minister hasn't resigned yet, and now there's also a hunger strike there's a hunger strike of 13 or 14, I believe, young activists in front of the Ministry of Environment, calling for the resignation of the minister, which obviously still hasn't happened. So when all of these developments, converged, Speaker of Parliament called for a so-called national dialogue table, and the national dialogue table scheduled on September 9th, hence the next big protest. So I think the political establishment, and the political class realized that things were starting to move beyond their control. Something had to happen, and so they called for this so-called national dialogue table. Now, this isn't the first time that they call for this. Everyone is saying that this has no constitutional value. We are a parliamentary democracy. We have a political institutions in which this dialogue and resolution of the country's problems should take place, as opposed to invented dialogue negotiation tables, which have no constitutional and legal value. So one of the biggest reactions to everything that has happened is the convocation of this national dialogue, so-called national dialogue table, which will happen on September 9. On the agenda of this national dialogue are a couple of the demands, as well as of the couple of the current demands, as well as other ones, most notably talking about the holding of the parliamentary elections, mm-hmm. which is also a very important demand, a current demand of everyone that's on the ground. So we'll see what happens, but it may just be a way for the government to gain time as well, and to decrease the momentum on the streets.
Just before we finish, I'm conscious that one of the big news stories locally it's grown over the last few months, but actually the last week it has kind of dominated the news, has been kind of refugees from Syria and other parts kind of going through, kind of coming towards Europe. We've had kind of folk at Calais that are being blockaded against getting on trains and so on to get into the UK. And there has been a kind of a real change of public opinion in many ways over the last few days, following tragic pictures of children on beaches kind of getting washed up on the shores. But I mean, I've been aware for a long time that Lebanon has been very generous in a sense to its Syrian neighbours. I mean, with a population of 3 million, you have ended up with over a million folk coming across the border, increasing the population of your country enormously. I mean, what kind of impact has that had on Lebanon as a whole? I mean, to increase your population so quickly with folk who have so little would really, economically, never mind any other way, would be really quite, quite a stress.
Absolutely. The refugee issue, I think, in the world, and most notably in Europe, obviously everyone knew that it was a problem. But for Lebanon, it has been the case ever since the crisis exploded and the crisis exploded in Syria since 2011. Mm-hmm. International organizations, most notably the UN and the UNHCR, have reiterated constantly that the Syrian refugee crisis has become one of the biggest in history. a couple of, well, the last time I checked, the numbers were, the official numbers of Syrian refugees in Lebanon were about 1.2 or 1.3 million. And as you said, in a country with a population of about 4 million. Now, the reason that the official figures may be inaccurate is because, A, there were many Syrians in Lebanon even before the crisis, even before the crisis and before the war. And two, many people do not register as well. So, as you said, we have borne, you know, a very, very big brunt of the problem. It's not an issue of discrimination. It's on the very contrary. I mean, as Lebanese, we do know and understand the hardships of war from our, you know, recent history and because of the civil war that we went through from 1975 to 1990. So we do understand the pain and the hardship, but there is so much that a country of our size can handle. Mm-hmm. And the challenges have been enormous. They've been enormous to host communities, which are already live in difficult conditions, and it's been also a challenge on infrastructure, because as you know, our infrastructure is already in very poor condition, let alone with 1.3 million extra on this, using the infrastructure. It's been a challenge.
And yet compared to Europe, the in a sense, quotas and a more strict kind of border control has only come after 1.2, 1.3 million people have come across the border. So you have been relatively welcoming to your neighbours, whereas in Britain we're thinking of maybe, there could be, there was talk in the papers yesterday of 15,000 refugees being allowed into the country.
Which for me is, I mean, it's very, very ironic and quite outrageous. I mean, it's not only Britain, but, most of Europe. I think what also has to be highlighted here is how wealthier Arab countries. I mean, because you cannot, we cannot forget. I mean, the brunt of the refugee crisis has been handled by Lebanon, by Jordan, by Turkey, and the surrounding countries. But have you known of any single Arab oil exporting country that has received any Syrian refugee? I think the answer is no, and it is.
There's a lack of compassion as well as a kind of maybe a closed-mindedness to the problem.
Oh, I think, well, again, that's a very nice way of putting it, but I mean, it's completely outrageous. Yeah. It's completely outrageous. I mean, you either talk about Arab solidarity. Arab solidarity and being Arab is not on, doesn't, you know, come on paper and on speech. It has to come in actions. Whatever, the Gulf countries are doing, they're not doing enough. And this is one of, if we're talking about this as one of the major humanitarian crises in world history, they have a duty to do more, and they're not doing it.
Okay. Well, Marina, thank you very much for your time this morning. If folk want to follow you, they can find you on your blog. Your URL is? Where can they find
it's, you? It's iontheeast.org. There's also a Facebook page to follow, as well as Twitter, which goes by the handle iontheeast as well.
And you get lots of kind of informed commentary about what's happening in the Middle East, and in particular around Lebanon and Beirut. Marina, many thanks, and all the best for the next few weeks as you continue to be on the ground and see what's happening in those protests.
Thank you, and all the best to you too, Belfast.